So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this International. I'm Pete. I'm with my friend Timothy. Timothy, man, what's going on?
Oh, same old Pete. Been an interesting week, I would say. But yeah, how you been?
Doing good. I just bought my Making Town and my Scenic City Rumble ticket today. I'll probably pick up my Action one later, probably sometime next week. And nice. You ready for that trip? I'm hearing the G1 is going to be in the first round. It's going to be in Dallas, so I'm probably going to go check that out, depending on ticket prices and stuff. How expensive do you think those suckers are going to be?
I would expect very expensive. Depending on what they mean, if it's the same as when they did the kind of G1 kickoff stuff here on the West Coast, the tickets weren't terribly expensive. You know, the show, they just weren't real G1 shows, you know.
Right.
But I don't know if that's, are they, I don't know, what's the rumor for this? Is it going to be like that, or is it going to actually be G1 matches?
I don't know. It's just right now that they just announced it, so, I mean, it's.
Yeah.
I mean, they haven't announced tickets on sale yet, so.
I would guess it's going to be one of those, like the G1, you know,
thing
kickoff.
That we had this year.
Yeah, like they had, were they have it last year and this year? I don't remember.
Anyway, it was 2018, I think.
Okay, yeah, and then it was like kind of a, wasn't really the same thing. It wasn't really like a G1 show. And then the ones that they had here in Long Beach, the tickets weren't super expensive. I also heard, now that I'm thinking about this, someone, I think it was Lanza on Voices of Wrestling, was trying to make talking points about Kenny Omega. And I just thought of it because I'm talking about those shows. But I think he said that the Cow Palace show for New Japan was the highest drawing show in the history of the Cow Palace. I think he said something along those lines. Maybe he said this decade.
Maybe this decade. I can't imagine it. I mean,
yeah, but it stood out to me.
The Cow Palace would be sold out in 40 days.
Yeah, the thing was is that he said that, and I thought that it sounded ludicrous. You know, if that was true in general. If he said this decade, I could almost buy it. But I also feel like fucking APW probably came close to outdrawing them. Because I was in the building for the New Japan show, and that building was empty.
During the glory days with Bachwinkle and Stevens, I mean, they'd sell that sucker out.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
And I tweeted out a picture of myself. I mean, there was an entire section that I sat in all by myself. There was literally nobody else in this whole upper bowl section for as far as the eye could see, really. The only parts of the building that were filled in was down at the bottom.
Okay.
So to me, I'm like, the idea that was the highest drawing, and that being like a feather in the cap, because he said they've been, you know, that's the thing too, is he said they've been running shows in the Cow Palace forever, like for how long they've been running. But then, so that's why I made it feel like he was saying ever, the highest drawing ever, and there's no fucking way.
No fucking way, yeah. There's no way, I mean.
But yeah, that was a diatribe. I'm sorry. I just, thinking about those New Japan shows that they've had in California so far, it made me think of that. But the Texas, I mean, that'll be pretty cool. Like I said, I went to the one at the Cow Palace. Part of the draw there for me was the Cow Palace and the history of that. I didn't get a chance to see wrestling in the Cow Palace ever with the history of it. And growing up in California was a big deal to me. So that was part of why I wanted to go, and I wasn't able to make the APW shows that they've had there yet, and it was just like, it was a perfect timing, I was going to be able to make it, so I went, and I could see the same thing if it's in Texas, wanting to go just to be in the building for it, you know?
Yeah, for me, I'd love going to Dallas, because I'll take the train, and I think that taking a train, and this isn't like a commuter train, like New York City type stuff, this is like, you know, a real train. And
yeah, like Amtrak or something.
Yeah, it's Amtrak.
Yeah.
And to me, there's nothing better than traveling via train. It's like the most stress-free way to travel, if you ask me.
Yeah, I dig it, man, personally.
Yeah, I mean, like I've said before, it's like you have a seat and you can probably put 3 or 4 dead bodies where your legs are. Plenty of room, and it's never super crowded. Yeah, but you can get up and walk around. Plenty of stuff to do. Wi-Fi, all that jazz.
Yeah. And the food
Easy,
cart,
easy thing.
drinks. Yeah. I mean,
Yeah,
there's a dining cart
exactly.
usually. And
Yeah, I mean, I usually bring my own food with me because it's Dallas, so it's like a 5-hour trip.
right.
So yeah, I'd rather not do that than. I've never really looked at the pricing, but I'm assuming they gouge you food wise at the.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not cheap, but they also have drinks. And the drinks, to me, were not egregious.
Okay.
Like, decent beers were not, like, super expensive. And that was primarily it. And then we had, there was something weird on the last time I took the train, where this person got, like, was snuck on. They didn't have a ticket, all this. So we had, like, a little bit of a stop that was not very long. It was, like, 45 minutes max, the delay. But because of that, they were like, the dining car is just open for anybody. You can go get whatever. And they just,
Okay.
like, it was all free. So that was, so that was a different situation with that, where but it is cool that they have all that food and stuff there, you know.
Yeah, and most of the time I've traveled, it's usually I'm it's usually even where I'm traveling from, it's usually the same train time, and so I'm usually traveling at like 9 in the morning and getting there like at 2 o'clock or something, so I'm not usually boozing it up at that hour
Yeah, that's fair.
and stuff. So yeah, so but yeah, and then I mean there's all this news coming out of Wrestle Kingdom where Kenny Omega's come going. Is he going WWE where he's gonna end up AEW? I'm guessing I think he's WWE bound. What about you?
I don't know. I
We'll
don't
see.
know. We'll see. I mean, crazier things have happened. You know, Walter saying in interviews and stuff that he would never go to WWE. And then, I mean, he's not going, but he has signed. And there is the stuff
Right.
with Kenny. It's always felt like Kenny is not the guy who's going to care about America as much. He's been, you know, to him, maybe he thinks it is different, but he's been in developmental in WWE. I know he'll probably skip developmental, at this point, but I think it's maybe it's not for him. Maybe it is. It would depend. I could see him going. I doubt it. I think Japan is the place for him, and I don't think he really cares about going. I think the interesting thing to think about, and it's something that crossed my mind today with this stuff about AWE and this and that. I mean, we can assume, and people can assume whatever they want, but there's pretty big backing behind AWE, and I couldn't see it being crazy that they don't run shows in Japan at some point. Realistically, I mean, you know, Fight Club Pro just ran a show in Japan, and they're like not even a large level indie. And AWE has so many people with so many connections in Japan that I don't think it would be insane to say that they couldn't run a show. So if they're gonna have like some Japanese side of business or working with New Japan, then I could see Kenny doing that. But I doubt that he's going to go to WWE full time. We'll see.
And money's always,
Yeah.
a difference maker.
For sure, for sure.
So we'll see. AWE, I mean, it's there. I mean, we see it. Somehow Brandi Rhodes has a controlling power in it, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm fine with that. I don't know.
Cody. I mean, I think these guys are good. They're a good basis for the company, but man, they gotta. I don't know. I mean, they need to sign. They need to get. I think it's gonna be it's a lot more difficult than people are thinking. Do they just try to go after their niche crowd? If that's the case, I think they're doomed for failure. If you're, but also, I don't think they're ready to go for a big, super giant crowd either. Like, they're not ready to be WWE either. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a lot more difficult than people think. I'm curious. I think it's a really interesting story to see. I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah, they proved that they helped spike attendance in Ring of Honor. But you know what? Ring of Honor also had a strong backbone of talent and had an infrastructure that was already in place. And so you here, you're going into a brand new guy. You have Khan, who named his kid in charge. That sounds almost sounds like Dixie Carter-esque in a way. But well, we'll see. I'm curious how that plays out. How interested are you in seeing how that plays out?
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm excited for it. I think some of the arguments I'm hearing about Khan, the son, are really interesting. This idea that, like, because he's paid attention to newsletters and written on message boards, that means that he's that it's insane to call him a money mark. And like you said, mentioned that, like, the Dixie Carter reference there. I guess historically people believe that there's never been a wrestling fan who is also a money mark. I mean, I don't know what you think most money marks are. So just the fact that the guy knows about the business side of things and is a fan of wrestling, I don't think it precludes him from that. But
so
I am
just because you watch wrestling, so doesn't make you an expert on.
Yeah, in reading the Observer, you know, constantly and all this stuff. Like, it's, I don't know, it's just so odd to me that that's the argument. Oh, you guys should. I mean, you don't know. He's definitely qualified. I'm like, this means nothing. Like, there's no, that doesn't prove any qualification. Wrestling is a weird business.
Has he ever written a wrestling show? No.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's important to get the right people behind you. And I think you get the Cody and the Bucks. I mean, I think that's a good thing.
For sure.
But,
yeah,
you know,
but wrestling's
also
a weird business, man.
I mean, we'll see what happens, but they need to get people. I mean, I hate to say it, but you need to have people with some wrestling experience there, too, who behind the scenes. And you know what? They're becoming less and less. They're becoming an endangered species because they don't exist anymore.
Right. No, that's true. One thing that's interesting to me is I think that even with the cool thing about All Elite and the fact that there is, you know, the teasing about the contracts that there are out there and the situations, and it sounds like they were done pretty smartly. The idea that they have kind of gates that open or rollovers that go into effect pending certain, like, business acquisitions, business movements, is smart instead of signing up for guaranteed money on a speculation. So I think that shows some savvy there. But one thing that's really interesting that I thought about is, and, you know, it's kind of just crossing my mind, thinking about, like, the bidding wars and all the stuff that people are talking about. And they're talking about, you know, some of the talents like Bandido and guys who are signed, obviously. But the cool thing about the All Elite is that it's, like, kind of more truly independent in spirit, more than the other, you know, definitely more than WWE and more than ROH. So, like, it's nice to think that AWE could be whatever size it ends up being and be a home for, like, a Nick Gage, as much as, you know, you could say whatever you want about garbage wrestling, but it's like ROH, WWE, I don't think Nick Gage is a guy that has any chance. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. I totally agree there.
And there's going to be acts like that, that, you know, Joey Janela is another one that, like, I mean, I think he might fit in WWE, but he also may never get a shot.
Yeah.
And so it's cool.
So
it's cool to think that AWE can exist for guys like that to be put on the level that they deserve. Even if they don't fit kind of the squeaky clean corporate model. And it really, in some ways, does feel like a hearkening back to the territories where there could be actual outlaws, and AWE could push, you know, in some ways kind of push that Overton window, as they talk about in politics, like the idea that if you show that guys in that caliber can be top level draw stars in some way, it may entice Ring of Honor, WWE to open up a little bit on the concept of what wrestling is and what works. So I think that is, AWE is a good thing in a lot of ways, no matter what it ends up being. And I'm just interested to see how it does. And honestly, I'm rooting for it. Like, I hope AWE does very well.
Same here. I totally agree. I think competition is just good for the business.
Right. Totally. So, yeah. So, and I just, you know, I think Rovert called me bitter online talking about AWE, joking around. It really, you know, that really hurt my feelings, though, because I don't feel like I'm a bitter person. I'm pretty positive for the most part. So I thought he had me missed on the pegging there, saying that I'm a bitter person when it comes to AWE and the Khan family and all that, you know.
Well, it won't be the first or the last time.
Exactly.
I definitely think it's a good thing. I want to succeed. I'm just, you know, of course, I'm just nervous because we've seen upstarts come and go. We've seen it. I mean, we've seen companies just suck and be around forever, like TNA. I think it's just, it's creating stars, being creative. I find it fascinating just because there's so many Cody Rhodes and Dusty Rhodes similarities now. that I find really fascinating.
Right.
Where it's like you could definitely tell Cody definitely learned a lot from his father and kind of gets it. So I in a way that a lot of wrestlers don't. And so I'm really curious about that. I'm curious about what type of Japan connection they're going to have. I think that's going to be I think somehow they're going to end up with New Japan as a partner. And I think Ring of Honor will be shit out of luck. I think I have a feeling their announcing team is going to end up being the New Japan announcers for the most part, in Kevin Kelly and whoever, being Don Callis. But yeah, I think he's affiliated with TNA right now, so yeah. I'm not sure about that. But it's definitely a story going forward that's really fascinating. I mean, the money I'm hearing they're offering competitive contracts with the WWE. That's interesting. And gutsy, but I mean, if you want to compete, you have to, I guess. But yeah, you just got to make sure you're getting the right people. I mean, I like Cody. I like the Young Bucks. I mean, I know they have a connection. I'm not the hugest fan of either one of them. I can people buy Cody as a top guy. The people believe that the Bucks are the best tag team in the world. People are beginning to think Adam Page has an upside. Britt Baker, I think she's could be talented, but I don't think she's like the centerpiece of women's wrestling for him. So hopefully they have other options there. But I like Britt Baker.
I like Britt, and I think that she's a good story because she's got that background as the being a doctor.
Right.
And I mean, I hate to say this because it can come across sexist, just because she happens to be a woman, and I would say this if it was the other way too, but she feels like a little bit of a political signing. I mean, she's with Adam Cole, and I feel like it's a little bit of a, it's something, it's a message of some kind, but that feels a little bit that way too, so.
And those are pretty much all the names so far, right?
Yeah, so far that's all I've heard. From people that they have committed. There's a lot of others obviously that are rumored. And those contracts that supposedly can roll over into being exclusive. You talked about the commentary team. Thinking about it, I'm like, how involved is Kevin Kelly in this? Kevin Kelly was a backstage important part of ROH. He separated himself from ROH at a pretty ideal time. Went full-time with New Japan, basically, in between. Was always a proponent of the Young Bucks, a guy who's talked about his, pushed for the use of the Young Bucks in ROH, even in times when they were not necessarily popular with the regime of the booking committees and stuff in ROH. So it's interesting
guy
to think.
Guy always seemed like they had a... Yeah, I mean, he spins it anyway. Like, he has a pretty good eye for young talent.
Yep. So a guy who, where does he get that Jim Ross role in AWE, the talent relations kind of guy while doing commentary? I wouldn't be shocked. He's kind of a disciple of Jim Ross. So him kind of following even the same career trajectory as Jim Ross is not surprising to me. And Jim Ross also was smart enough to know, to buddy up with certain guys who had power. To follow them along. So I wouldn't be shocked if he wasn't, friendly with Cody, friendly with the Young Bucks, and maybe more than just a on-air commentary talent for them. On the other side, I could see Excalibur. It'd be interesting if Rocky Romero took off from New Japan to go with AWE full-time, or if there is some kind of partnership there. It's definitely very interesting stuff going on. It's crazy how big of a story it is with being so little. They really are doing a good job with social media blitz, really getting everything out there, taking advantage of stuff like Dave. You almost at this point, I'm like, how much of the bet that started this all for All In was staged? How much of that was a plan?
Well, I think Dave's been co-opted from these guys for the last couple of years.
Yeah. So I'm like, maybe the the whole fucking start of this with the like betting Cody Rhodes that they couldn't sell out a building or whatever to set up All In was all a fucking smokescreen. This whole thing has been planned from the start to kind of test the waters and build this whole thing out. And then basically the Observer feels like it's the, you know, the media branch or the communications department
the
for
WWE
AWE.
Magazine of
AWE, basically. It's kind of what it feels like. It's, I mean, the propaganda wing of the empire here. So it is very interesting.
I've heard people saying, well, so what if Dave is an advisor? Well, it's not a big deal if he's an advisor, but he shouldn't be reporting on other things if he's the advisor for this company is what.
Exactly.
What it is, I mean,
should be disclosing it for sure.
Yeah,
you know, but that's Dave. He's not really. I don't think, you know, he doesn't hold himself to that standard, and that's fine.
Yeah,
but
Hulk
yeah,
Hogan showing up on Raw next week. For Mean Gene, it seems like it's they're setting him up so he doesn't get booed because he's coming out to deal for the aftermath of Mean Gene's death. Seems pretty political to get him back on TV and try to pop a rating on a man's death. It doesn't seem a very genuine. Where do you fall on this?
Yeah, it's very, I mean, fortuitous, I guess, in some ways that the timing worked out. But I bet that it would have been whoever the next big legend to pass, they would have figured out a way to link it to Hulk Hogan to do this. But Mean Gene is a pretty, I hate to say it in these terms because it sounds so cold, but the pretty lucky one for them because that's a guy that it doesn't take much stretching to connect to Hogan. I mean, they have history going back to the AWA. So it's an easy one to make it look like it makes sense. Thing with WWE is they have such little goodwill now. I mean, just recently with the stuff with Saudi Arabia, the crowd is pretty sour on them as a company and sees them as being pretty cold. I think there's always been bubblings about the stuff with Trump that grosses out a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I think that there's some people who think of the Dean Ambrose turn when Roman announced that he had leukemia as being in poor taste. That one I forgive more, but I know it attributes to people not being super high on WWE. So something like this, probably this is not the time for it, but I mean, fuck, maybe it is. I mean, there is some kind of backlash, I think. Trump being president does feel like it does kind of embolden some people to feel like they're kind of allowed to push back on what's like PC culture and all this stuff and worrying about that kind of stuff. So in some ways it may be a defiant move also to just say like, we can bring Hulk back and it doesn't matter. And we can be kind of crass about it and it doesn't matter as long as we have like a thinly veiled shield of saying that it's genuine. It doesn't matter that it comes across to a lot of people as being scuzzy. I don't know. But yeah, that's to me, it feels like the wrong move, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, like for me, Mean Gene was a big part of me and my wrestling fandom growing up. I mean, he was by far the best play, I mean, not best play by play, but best ring announcer, interviewer of all time. I mean, he was incredible in the WWF. He was great on WCW Nitro. You know, people always remember his 1-800 numbers. He was just an important part of a piece of wrestling history from the AWA to WWF and NWA. I mean, WCW. I mean, it just all connected. And yeah, it was. Even when he'd come in and do these guest spots here and there, he was fantastic in it, and you just miss him because he's such a polished, just a professional, and just such a character, and guy who's kind of larger than life, and it's just, you know, it's, that guard is passing away from Gorilla Monsoon to Bobby Heenan, and now Gene Okerlund. You know, those guys are just, you know, they broke the mold with those guys because they're so unique and special to the wrestling business that you can't even come close to doing it anymore because there's not those shysters in the wrestling business anymore. Do you have any like Mean Gene memories or anything?
I mean, he was ever present, obviously, through the history of wrestling, as far as I was concerned, for the most part. Yeah, I mean, he was always there. So it is weird to think about. He was just phenomenal at what he did as the interviewer and setting everything up, the consummate professional. Listened to the Pritchard show today about him, and there was a lot of really interesting stuff there about, especially about being a professional, you know what I mean? Just being so good at what he did.
Yeah, so smooth.
Yeah, so something standing out is weird to think of because he was so ingrained. I mean, there's the funny stuff that people joke about, you know, like the fuck it and stuff like that. But like, other than that, I mean, that was why he was so good, is that, like you said, he was a professional, but he was also ingrained to the scenery of wrestling to where he just felt like a part of it. And he didn't really feel like a standout larger than life character, which was exactly what his role should be. But he wasn't bland, you know, I mean, he was unique and very skilled.
No,
he did,
colorful, very kick-ass.
Yeah, so just like a great natural charisma, but felt subdued and really helped to kind of bolster the wrestling as feeling legitimate and feeling important. So that was kind of the overall thing with him. I mean, clearly.
Yeah, the one thing, I just remember when they replaced him on WWF television, I believe it was Todd Pettengill, and it was just like a big, almost like a, like me and Gene always felt, like you knew he was a wrestling carny guy. But he was so smooth about it, while Pettengill just felt like almost like a buffoon compared to Mean Gene, and it was just like a massive drop off. And he was never, I mean, yeah, you got what you paid for. You got a lower rent, while Mean Gene, I mean, was still doing, went over to WCW and did it for another freaking 8 years after he left WWF. So, I mean, very successful guy, and he'll be sorely missed in the wrestling business. Often imitated, never duplicated type of thing.
Right.
Oh, man. Anything else you want to hit on before?
Well, you mentioned SCI Rumble, and it just made me think of the fact that I got approved for my time for SCI this year, so definitely going to be... now I just got to start planning the trip, but, I mean, it's not going to be a big thing. I'm going to just be heading out this year for it. And then that reminded me that I actually got tickets to PWG. So they're still on sale, which I heard, you know, some people are shocked, but it has not been selling out as much for regular shows at the, or not as quickly at the Globe. There have been a few shows since they moved to the Globe that have not instantly sold out.
Is some of it because the star power is down a little bit, people think, or...
I don't,
you know, like losing like a Riddle and then Keith Lee and
the Bucks. I mean, the Bucks have not been around as much, and they draw for sure for PWG.
Oh yeah.
So I think that there is some of that. But I think also the building, I mean, that building is bigger, and that is just part of it too. The ticket prices have increased a little bit, but not insane. I think that there are some people who don't like the building and don't like the situation, and I can't blame them. This card just had the perfect mix for me to want to come. I mean, got Jungle Boy coming to PWG for the first time against Brody King. So two California boys going at it. That's cool for me. Grisham debuting was another big one, especially he's going up against Robbie Eagles. So, you know, I wanted to go for that. And then the big one to me is the main event. I mean, Jeff Cobb versus Trevor Lee, two of my guys who both could be leaving anytime soon. Going to tear it down. Have a great chemistry and history with each other, especially, you know, when they're in a stable together in AAW. Both guys that I fucking love. So feeling like this is the spot. Trevor, been talking about being the last OG of PWG, and he, in some ways he kind of is. At this point, he's probably the longest tenured regular, other than maybe Chuck Taylor.
But Chuck Taylor isn't a top guy anymore.
Right. Is he? No, not really. He kind of is. I mean, he was the champion for a while. But no, I mean, you know, and he has been off and on a little bit lately. But so it does feel like Trevor, I mean, talking about being the man in PWG, and he really kind of is. And he's going up against Cobb, who's the champion, who, I know there is the PWG ROH working relationship. So maybe he's not leaving anytime soon, but who knows particularly for sure. You know, ROH does have exclusive contracts as well that keep guys from working indie shots. Trevor is, I mean, for sure gone, but I wouldn't be shocked if both guys are leaving, that they just put the belt on Trevor real quick to give him the golden watch kind of send off, that they same similar thing that they did with Bryan Danielson. I wouldn't be 100% shocked by that, and then go from there. It might be good for a reset for PWG too, to move the title around. But we'll see. I mean, I'm, yeah, so just excited for that. A send-off for two of my guys, possibly. Maybe Jeff still hangs around, but definitely going to be a just a barn burner of a match that both guys are going to be super into. So that was, like, kind of the deciding factor of, I got to go. So I'll be at PWG this couple weeks, actually. It's coming up quick.
They might not have time to do the Golden Watch thing, because I hear he only has one more booking with CWF Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, if they did it, they'd have him win the belt, and then just, he's gone. That's it.
Okay, that's it.
That's the same thing that they did with Danielson. Danielson won the title, and they knew he was leaving that night. And then they put the title up for the winner of Bola. And so that was like a really cool kind of thing that they did years and years ago. And I could see him doing something similar with Trevor, if not exactly the same.
And then I guess there was the Tony Storm nudes.
Yeah.
That's
a
shame, man.
Yeah.
Anytime people invade somebody's privacy, that's just disgusting and wrong. You feel sorry for him. I wonder how this is going to affect her standing in the company.
A lot of people rallying behind her and showing support.
Yeah.
Which is cool. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to hurt her, but you never know.
Yeah, you just never know how people are going to react to it. They're still scumbags. All right. MLW Fusion number 37. This might have been one of the worst television shows I've seen in a long time. this is rough, man.
Yeah.
This is rough to get through. It started off great because we got this great Conan vs. Loki video package. And I thought that was the highlight of the show. Great video package. What did you think?
Yeah, yeah. The opening got you kind of excited, I guess, for it. And made it make sense. Like, oh, this kind of now makes sense. And then I felt like they really did not deliver in the match.
No, then it became, like almost like, who's the editor on this one? Who approved this shit? But we'll get to that in a bit. Simon Gotch versus Ace Romero. Simon Gotch $20,000 challenge. You know, I get Ace Romero, but you know what? If you're going to have an Ace Romero on your roster, you shouldn't have a Barrington Hughes on your roster. You should only have one super fat guy on your roster so they stand out, unless they're a tag team, honestly. I know that's like, why would you have that? Well, you need to keep your roster unique, and having two guys who can play the same role, two baby face fat guys, I don't know. I just don't think it makes any sense whatsoever. And of course, I'm not saying I'm right, but I don't know why you'd have both guys and employ both guys. You know, Romero won this one in a quick one. You know, nothing special here. Kind of a waste of Gotch. Almost like it felt like a Gotch blow off. Like the angle losing Lawler than losing here on his $20,000 challenge. Kind of makes him DOA in the water. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I didn't think it worked super well for me. I think that this wasn't the debut of Ace Romero, and it's not like he was a jobber before, but I felt like he wasn't really treated with the focus to where you get a lot of payoff off of this for him being the guy that wins this. We talked about it. I mean, this angle with Gotch doing the gimmick is the, you know, whatever amount of money challenges, was really poorly executed all across. And you talked about how you could use it to get somebody over, properly. And I don't think that this was the guy to do it with. I'm with you.
My choice of who I'd put over.
I think Ace Romero and Barrington Hughes are, I mean, Ace Romero is so much better than Barrington Hughes, than Barrington Hughes, that I almost, it's hard for me to accept seeing them in the same role, but you're right about that. But it didn't really cross my mind because I just don't think of Barrington Hughes as the same as Ace Romero. But they do, I guess, do fit the same role. So I get that. And also I shouldn't say role so much when I'm talking about Barrington Hughes and Ace Romero, and that's just an unfortunate word choice. Simon Gotch, like you talked about with the write off. It's interesting because I watched earlier his match on the recent Beyond show with Timothy Thatcher, and he had his different mask on. He had shaved his mustache, cut his hair differently. He looked to be in a little bit better shape. He was wrestling much better. And again, of course, it's against Thatcher, who's a guy who really fits the style he wants to work. But he felt more like he's had something to prove. And I wouldn't be shocked if maybe he is leaving MLW and going off to do other things. And that's why in that match, he looked like he, again, was trying to prove something. I thought he looked way better.
Are they going to give him kind of a new start, a new character in MLW? Right.
Yeah, they might freshen him up, which may not be a bad idea. It'd be interesting because he's having, like, I guess it's technically a heel turn. So I guess it makes sense, but it's just weird to have him do a couple jobs really quick before you do the heel turn kind of makeover. But I guess they're just trying to get something out of him before. So, you know, usually they do the jobs before the heel turn rather than after. But maybe the makeover will work. I don't know. So yeah, I thought that all in all, the booking on this was pretty terrible.
And then it gets worse because we get this section where they're in a limo with Martinez with a bunch of fucking strippers in a limo. And they're like table dancing for him. I don't know. Maybe Court Bauer went to do it to the strip club and promised the stripper some TV time. I don't know. I don't know. And then they're talking about Cotto Brazil's injury. I don't know how this even equates. I don't get it. I was just watching this TV. Like, what is? It was like. I don't know. It was weird. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, it was like the worst fucking case of just like, how embarrassed would you be if someone walks up on you watching this? And like, that's like a big thing that people talk about with wrestling. But what the fuck, man? You just got like bare ass on the screen repeatedly over and over again. None of it makes any fucking sense. Like, Cotto Brazil injury and connected to... I don't know how the Cotto Brazil injury is connected to him. They're trying to force that into the storyline. The whole thing is just...
Yeah, did they show us... Did he get an off-camera table dance and hurt his ankle? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, you're not... This was fucking horrendous, honestly. And you got this, you know, Romero guy... Or not Romero. What's Rodriguez guy that's like... just been completely cucked by Conan repeatedly in every angle, and now you're going to try to heat him up? I'm supposed to be serious about him? Like, fuck this.
Then we get Ariel Dominguez versus Andrew Everett, and Dominguez goes over, and they're doing a story how he's been training with Team Filthy. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, there's a stupid... boxer kind of gimmick, and I thought this was a train wreck. What do you think?
I mean, this Ariel Dominguez kid looks like he might have potential, but I don't think he can be much. He's really a little bit too undersized, but he's got a good look. But I wouldn't have given him this win over Everett, really. Just talking about it, he does the chaos theory, like, from the ropes, not from the corner to corner. Like, Doug Williams had to do it the longest way he could because of how big he was and everything. And this guy can do a tiny version of it. I guess he is pretty high-level All-American wrestling amateur wrestler. So, I don't know. Maybe the idea is for him to be pushed as, like, a Chad Gable, Kurt Angle kind of guy, squeaky clean babyface.
He doesn't have the charisma those guys have.
Yeah, I don't think he can pull that off, and I think that he's also smaller. I don't think he could. Both of those guys really worked as kind of heels. Gable, lesser to an extent, but realistically, he kind of started out as like a. He was at least supposed to be an annoying heel. So yeah, to me, I'm just like, this guy, I don't really see it. Andrew. I was hoping he was going to get serious a little bit more this year in his return, but I don't think it's happening. I'm not really seeing much from him and not in this match either. But I mean, you know, this match was kind of an angle to get the Ariel kid over too, but still it was not great.
Yeah. Then we get a Conan interview, which is solid. Tommy Dreamer interview, which is okay. Anything you want to add?
Yeah,
to
I thought the Tommy Dreamer interview was pretty good compared to what he's been doing on the shows, but again, that's it.
And then we showed Loki and then the filthy brawl from last week that went off the air. I thought that looked good.
Yeah.
Then we get Teddy and Pillman, and that's, again, another what-the-fuck moment.
Yep.
And we get Loki versus Conan, no DQ. Fuck, I mean, Loki gets busted open from I called it a slapjack, but I know it's like a sock with a rock in it or whatever, coins in it or whatever, prison stuff. And then the finish is Conan's getting fucking shanked, right?
Yeah, this was, I mean, you talked
fucking
about it.
Terrible.
You talked about what would make sense for the booking last week somewhat, and, like, this was not it. This is not it, Chief. I mean, the start, I don't think, worked at all. I think it made, Conan didn't lay it into where it looked believable. Loki is selling and bleeding to begin with. I mean, what the fuck? It takes all of these guys to help Loki. And this is what I was talking about. I feel like Conan, it's dangerous to set something like this up because Conan's too egotistical, I think, to just do what he should have done, which is play the old man who gets his ass kicked. I couldn't believe that he took it to Loki at all in this match, let alone was pretty dominant until, you know, Loki has to get all of his people to help him after the, you know, the brawl and everything you've been doing with Lawler and Loki moving up. Now, what does this say? Like, you know, all the people that Loki's beat and Conan's able to dominate him like this? This is fucking ridiculous. And then the stabbing is... the attempted... I mean, what the fuck was that? He's supposed to be stabbing him in the kidneys?
We saw it on TV. That shit should get you arrested. I'm sorry. That's just...
Yeah,
I don't know how that got through the booking. Like, they thought this was a good idea.
I don't know what they were thinking here. I mean, I've talked about kind of with Homicide that you can kind of buy some of the crazier aspects of Homicide's character, and I think that they try to have Loki in some ways be inspired by that. You know, he was trained by Homicide; they were in a group together, and so I could see. That, but Loki just doesn't have that same swagger that Homicide has to where it's believable, no matter how deep into the gangster key he is. It doesn't make me overlook what he's doing at all. It's fucking insane. It also doesn't make any sense. I don't know why he had to be stabbing him, really, because it's like, you could play off the history and you just need the commentators to say it. Like, Conan has kidney issues. He... I think even had a kidney transplant. So even if you just had like a, you know, a roll of quarters or, you know, Nux or whatever, and you punched him, you did a kidney punch on the guy, that's just as life threatening and more believable. So it's just like, that could be it. Like, why do you have to say, why does he have to have stabbed him? You know, but
it's fucking terrible.
It's fucking insane. I mean, and then you cut to the back.
It could be the, Observer Award, that would be the most tasteless angle I've seen all year. I mean, it has the potential to be there.
Oh, yeah. No.
I'm sure the WWE at some point will do something that they, you know, like they'll go back to Saudi Arabia with Donald Trump on the show.
We love to see it.
Yeah. God. I don't even want to. Let's just get away from that
yes,
show.
Yes, please, please.
Fucking sucked.
It's a nightmare. Right. And you know what? I was kind of trying to figure out how I could angle for this to get rid of one of the NXTs or something instead. But with the new Beyond Wrestling, you know, Uncharted show coming up and it's going to be live. I mean, to me, I'm like, say goodbye to MLW to review that almost in a heartbeat. Like, realistically, if MLW stays like this, last week the show was good though. So that's why I was kind of questioning that.
Yeah.
But, you know, episodes like this,
July to make our decision. So
right, but yeah, it's just like, man, if it stays like this, then I'm easily stop watching it. You know what I mean?
Yep. Now let's get over to NXT UK episode 21. Before we start that, you know, one of the things that makes NXT work is the turnover, where you're constantly moving people up to the main roster, you're freshening up the roster. Seems like it after every takeover. We get a roster shuffle or a new talent comes in or what have you. So you're able to keep the talent fresh there. Are they going to be able to do that with the NXT UK version?
I don't know, because we haven't. I mean, we're going through the first cycle here. We don't really know what the plan is. Are they going to be sending people from here to NXT? Are they going to be sending people from here to the main roster? Like, what's the plan? So we don't really know. We don't really know how much they're going to tour, how much they're going, how many shows they're really going to do. It's a different setup, obviously. There's no performance center in England, so you're not really, you don't have the under kind of belly of people that could justify the reason why you would do a loop of house show style shows, because you've got a lot of underneath guys that you want to just have getting reps in, and then you can put some of the bigger stars in the top matches.
Yep.
Just to fill in. Like, you don't have that whole setup. You don't have that whole system. So what does NXT UK mean? What is it exactly? So, yeah, I know. It is
like I'm question. Expecting eventually is some of the talent who gets stale at NXT, who they don't want to bring up to the main roster, might go over to UK. Like, I think, like, right now, I think Johnny Gargano would fit in over there. That's all those characters dead, stale, and no one gives a shit anymore right now about him. And if they're not going to move him to the main roster, I feel like maybe move him over there and he can work with the UK talent for a change of pace.
Right.
Well, but yeah, that's what
I was saying. And it seems like they're mixing in some people who aren't at that level, but are on kind of the opposite end, where they're like newer. Deonna Purrazzo here on this episode that we're going to watch showing up. She hasn't even really started her run in NXT yet, but they're sending her, they're kind of cycling her through here first, maybe, or maybe it's just one match.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like Dakota Kai. I think they're like, boom, boom.
Right.
Hey, she can work that style. We need help establishing the women's division. So yeah, I think her purpose was the, I don't think it's long term there, but I might be wrong. You know, maybe they don't have a spot for it with the women, but they see something with a lot of potential. So maybe they're gonna have her work up on top at NXT UK at first.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, in the Mae Young Classic, they've done even further stretches than playing off of, you know, Purrazzo's Italian heritage to be like why she's in the European scene. Yeah. You know, I mean, in the Mae Young Classic, they have women who also were born in America representing countries just because of their heritage, not necessarily being from there. So she wouldn't be an insane fit, you know, and stuff like that. You mentioned Kai. That's another one who feels like they kind of sent her over there. She's not really stale in NXT, but they sent her over. Yeah. Barthel, another one who, I mean, it feels makes more sense because he's part of the European scene. But,
yeah,
you know, still similar thing. Eichner as well, you know, so who knows? They may be planning to, like, cycle people through and around and... I mean, that could be interesting, but it doesn't feel the same as being able to watch that natural progression that you get in NXT.
Right. But to me, it's like the key of the NXT is getting them, you know, you get them on the TV for a while, but then you cycle them out to the main roster. And so so at least the roster in NXT always feels fresh. You're not, doesn't, you know, you don't get bored or like to me. I mean, you look at WWE and even New Japan, both, to me, both rosters are stale as fuck. And, I mean, then there's nothing they can do about it, really.
Right.
Like, we've had the same main eventers in New Japan. I mean, we've had the Omega, Okada, Tanahashi, Ishii, Zach, Juice. I mean, that pecking order for the same 2 years, you know, Goto, you know, it's just been there, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, that's for sure. The New Japan roster is pretty stale at this point. And then you've got guys like Nagata and, Kojima now kind of being cycled, Tenzan being cycled down to that kind of do-nothing roles.
Yeah.
So it frees up a little bit of space, but... For who? I mean, it feels like they have so many young boys who are probably pretty close to ready to being focused on in some ways.
Yeah, that's the thing. Then we see them already as young boys. They get cycled out, but then they get cycled back in 6 months to a year later. So it's not like it's that special, you know? It's
right.
Yeah, it's cool to watch the development, but then again, it's just same old. It's business as usual.
Right.
And I think the key is cycling talent, man. You can be a great talent, but man, if you become stale, it's just like you become stale. Randy Orton is the name that really pops into your head in WWE. Well, we open up here with Travis Banks versus Jamie Ahmed. I love Banks' new gear. He looks much more like a top guy with his gear. than his old gear. What about what I? And the match was fine, but I thought the gear change was the big freaking thing here. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's tough for me because I've seen the new gear in progress, so I thought of it as like heel gear kind of, and he's a babyface here, so it's hard for me not to have that have been connected really. But it definitely makes him look more. I don't know. It looks better, honestly. He looks more like a top level. Doesn't look like a kind of low rent as he did with the trunks that he had.
Yeah. And then we get a Banks-Devlin segment, and it looks like that's we're going to get a match there, and that screams show-stealing to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I kind of pitched last week when we were talking about possible Travis Banks matches to steal the show. I said Devlin and him probably made sense, and yeah, I mean, I think that these two could kill it together. I can't think of them having... I think they did have a match when Travis Banks was Fight Club Pro champion that was very good, but I expect that this will blow that out of the water, honestly.
Then we get a Mustache Mountain and how do you say it?
Gallus.
A video Gallus. Package. This is fine. What do you think of it?
Yeah, this was good. I mean, I think interested to see where they go. Yep. Not where they go, but interested to see. Yeah, because it doesn't feel. Feels like Mustache Mountain is going for the tag titles, and Gallus isn't really in the tag title tournament right now. Yeah, so we'll see where they're going.
Then we get who's here? Oh yeah, we get a Massive and Eddie Dennis video package, just queuing up their feud, and nothing bad here. I thought it was all pretty solid stuff. What about
you? Yeah, for sure, it works.
Then we get Williams and Jordan, and I kind of like him as a tag team versus Aichner and Barcel, but I really like Aichner and Barcel as a team. I actually love them as a team. They really do make an awesome heel team. But the match was fun. Both teams looked really, really good here. And yeah, I thought they had really good chemistry inside the ring. I'm just curious if they're able to. I don't know. I do like Barcel and Aichner as a top level team. I hope they get a run at the belts. Because I mean, right now I'd be prostituting Mustache Mountain's popularity because they're just super popular. And I think they need to help get some of these other teams over.
Yeah, and I like them too. I joked about Schadenfreude, which is just too good, or Schadenfraud, which is just too good of a name to not use a little bit. But they're a great team. I mean, I talked about it with Barthel. I think he's actually a better tag team wrestler, and it shows here. He's just much his kind of style just fits in better with this. I don't know what it is about him that singles doesn't work, but just a better setting here, even as a heel.
Yep.
The Amir Jordan and Kenny Williams team as like an odd couple team is starting to grow on me. But again, I mean, they do feel pretty separate. But we'll see if they continue on with this, if they don't do something with it or just split them apart pretty quickly. But yeah, good matchup. It really worked well. Barthel and Aichner should be, like you were talking about, be focused on somewhat to build up as a challengers or credible team against Mustache Mountain, because they're already pretty good together.
And then we get a little Storm and Piazza getting a little set up handshake thing to set up their match. It was a fine piece of business. What do you think?
Yeah, it was fine. The only unfortunate thing is it's like the wrong week for there to be an angle where it shows a close-up of Toni Storm's hand where you could see the tattoo. Just kind of a bummer for her in that regard. But yeah.
And then we get Johnny Satan with Sid Scala, and Coffee wants a done, pretty much.
Yeah, which I think we all saw coming. It was fine.
And then we get Candy Floss versus Ginny. You know, Ginny is just a natural star, has natural charisma. But I thought Candy Floss looked pretty good. Like, they have something with her, maybe. What do you think overall?
Yeah, I think Candy Floss is good. She's got some likability, quirkiness that works. I think that she could definitely fill a certain role for them. But I thought Jenny stood out here, especially for kind of snugging a lot of stuff up. Not a lot of goofiness in her, in the stuff that she did, like we've seen in other settings, especially in Progress. They really like their goofiness. The arm work, the arm focus all looked good. It was smart. And then I thought that the her striking game was looking really, really snug. So I was just, yeah, I thought Jenny is turning it up in ring here, too, to match her character work, which was always kind of her weak side. So I think sky's the limit here as she continues to move forward in NXT UK.
Yeah. Then we got Mustache Mountain versus Gallus. And I thought this was a good match. I gave it 3.25. I thought we got a good shine to start. And then we get a blindside tag that sets up the heat. I thought Trent Seven as the face in peril was pretty good. I hated his hot tag where he ran around outside the ring and snuck back in and Ned made the tag. I mean, you didn't get a pop at all because no one gave a shit on what was happening. They're like, what, huh? They were just utterly confused. I mean, there's that. I will say Tyler Bate was an awesome hot tag. When he got it, he was just all over the place. Just clicking on all cylinders, just drop kicking ass big time. Great, great hot tag. What do you think about the match?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, then we kind of get a schmoz, but then it leads to a Mustache Mountain pin, so they're going to the finals of the tournament.
Yeah, which makes, I mean, obviously makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, they're obviously a really talented team together. But some stuff is glaring. I mean, it's feeling like they're turning into the New Age Outlaws, the way it's like almost 100% like predictable who's going to be the face in peril, who's going to be the hot tag. You know, it's always Road Dogg taking the heat. It's always Trent Seven taking the heat, a tag into the hot tag man, and Tyler Bate, who's, I mean, obviously I think better than Billy Gunn was. Billy Gunn wasn't terrible though. But yeah, I mean, there's also some stuff that's glaring. I mean, especially after this stuff with Undisputed Era, just how blatant it is sometimes that Tyler Bate just stands there while the heels are doing stuff to his partner that other, you know, that he could do something when they're chasing him around the outside of the ring and he's just standing on the apron and they're like going to double team him. It's just like, why would he just stand there doing nothing? But I mean, that did pay off for him because then he gets the tag instantly. And it was obviously, I mean, you talked about it didn't get a pop from the crowd because of the way it was set up, and it was trying to be too cute because clearly the idea was that that would set up so that the first thing that Tyler Bate does for his hot tag could be a big suicide dive because everyone loves suicide dives, right? So that was just kind of blatantly like trying to be cute in that. That didn't really work. But, I mean, shit, Tyler Bate looks fucking phenomenal. I love that, you know, I've been talking about him turning into the UK Shawn Michaels, and he's turned the big kip up into part of his, you know, his signature moves and his hot tag and everything. Just like Shawn Michaels always had the big kip up spot. So that's just, it's so glaringly, obviously, the comparison now. But the fucking, you know, guy on your back with the German suplex is not very Shawn Michaels-esque. That's fucking nutty that he's able to do that. Two different guys who both clearly outweigh him by quite a bit, and he can pick both of them up like nothing. It's fucking insane. I mean, Tyler Bate is just a freak of nature at this point already. It's kind of wild. But yeah, I definitely thought that this was a good, solid match. I get you, but there is some tropes that are like kind of starting to become glaring with Mustache Mountain.
Yep. Agreed. And that leads us into NXT number 22 UK version, and we get that match of Storm and Piazza, and I loved it, man. I thought they did a very World of Sport oriented match start the match. It breaks down, and it's pretty much they're busting out strikes. Piazza, Diana is after the arm. Crowd's totally into it. I'm liking Storm selling of the arm. Big time rope break. Was huge moment. Momentum changer there. Really felt like the like the match needed another 5 minutes. It felt like they went right to the finish and they set a great table and then this and that, but it never felt like they went all the way with it. And I felt like they were like keeping this match in their back pocket for something more because they know it could be special because of what we got here. And it felt like that they can give it. If they need to give us a classic, they can do it, man. I thought this was a good, strong style 3.5-star match. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought that Tony turned it up when it comes to the selling and the baby face.
Yeah.
Kind of sympathy. The arm stuff was good. She was very dynamic, super into it. And I would say that the biggest flaw was that, the finish felt like it came out of nowhere. It didn't really feel set up properly, and it felt like we still had something left in the tank there when they just went home real fast, kind of out of nowhere. I was kind of shocked when it happened. I was stupidly, I kind of decry it in other places, but that big, the Storm Zero, it felt like was going to be just a big near fall, and they were going to get into heating it up a little bit more for the running into the finishing stretch. But then it felt a little flat.
Yep. And then we get, Rhea Ripley comes out. Just eyeball everything, and just a piece of business. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. I think Rhea still looks great. Tony looks good here, and I'm excited for that match. We'll see how it delivers this time out, in hopefully a bigger stage kind of setting.
Right. Then we get from Ben Affleck. did I say Ben Affleck? We get Johnny Cena, Scala. I don't know exactly sure what happened here, but it leads us to Josh Morrell versus the Wild Boar, and when we give us a little vignette of the Boar, so it seems like he's caught on with the power brokers, and they think they might have something, huh?
Yeah, or, I mean, he could be the classic jobber to the star situation, and they're going to build him up to some credibility to have him put other guys over, which is, either way works for me, as you're giving him something. Or if they're going to get behind him, I think they should get behind him. I literally just watched a couple days ago an old backyard match from him from a long time ago that really just showed how good he was even from early on. I mean, he's really just a great wrestler, man. I mean, seriously. So hopefully they can focus on him a little bit here, because I thought he looked great here kicking this guy's ass. Commentary did a good job of putting him over as being very unique, unique in his offense, unique in his style, unique in his demeanor, everything. So it does feel like hopefully they're trying to put some juice behind him.
Yep. Then we get a and I'm with you, I think Boar does deserve a push. Then we get some more Travis Banks, and we get Scala with Aigner and Barcel, and they want a tag challenge in there. Then we get Mastiff and Eddie Dennis, and that leads us to a double schmoz. They didn't really give us enough time to appreciate it. It felt like, I don't know, it felt like we were here for 6 months, but it was only like a month we were really there. What do you feel like, man?
I thought that they did a good job getting me excited, and I'm happy, even though it is the first takeover, and I wish that they would not even have any gimmicks and protect them. I like that the first gimmick they're doing is just a no DQ.
Yeah.
And they're keeping it real basic with two big bulls who want to just fight with no rules. So I'm okay with that, but it does feel kind of like, could you have done maybe no gimmick matches on your first takeover and kind of started slowly building to gimmick matches? But I thought that they are delivering on it. I think that takeover, in America was a little bit more subdued. We talked about it, but their history with gimmick matches was a lot more conservative. But this feels like it was set up pretty right, but maybe they are rushing the angles a little bit. They could have waited a little bit longer to build to the no DQ match.
Yeah. I mean, I know they've been trying to do something, but I don't know. Then we get Coffee and Dunn contract signing, and we see Dunn. I thought it was kind of dumb going after his fingers to try to break them while Dunn makes his comeback and then ends up laying out Dunn. So I don't know. I don't think Dunn did himself any favors here. I thought he looked stupid trying to break his fingers at a contract signing. Laying him out post was great, though. But it was how we got there. I just didn't think it clicked. What do you think?
Yeah, it felt a little stereotypical, especially putting him through the table thing that you just kind of expect is always going to happen. I thought both guys looked cool, but I agree with you that it was kind of just dumb of Pete Dunne to do what he did. But you know, he's supposed to be kind of an asshole, I guess, somewhat. So it's not insane, but I'm excited for the matchup still. But you know, contract signings are rarely good.
Then we get and that's it for the show. I don't know. I mean, they're building. I just feel like they're missing something right now still. But we'll see. Well, hopefully they hit it. Hopefully they knock it out of the park for their takeover.
Yeah, I'm excited for the takeover for sure. And we'll see how it goes from here.
And then the next episode, it was just straight up NXT, and it was pretty much a year in review. But we get one fresh match, which was we're just gonna cut. We'll hit that, which is Riddle and Cassius Ohno. This is their second match in NXT. The first one was on the special, where it was like a 6-second Riddle distraction. And so here they kind of work it like if they're in the beginning of a feud. So it was real stiff and it was hard fought. And I thought Ohno looking amazing. I thought Riddle looked really good. I love the release suplex by Ohno. Ohno's using the size to control Riddle at most times. I felt like Cassius Ohno was focusing on Riddle's back. And it had a real violent feel to it. But it was like, you know, like, but it felt like they were saving something for it to build to. And Riddle goes over, but post-match, Ohno attacks again and lays him out. And so the feud seems like it's continuing. But I'm not quite sure where they're going. Because, I mean, what else? What are they going to go do next? Riddle tapping out? I mean, Riddle, I don't know. I mean, he seems like he's already won the damn feud. I don't know where you go from this. Do you add another stip to it? I don't know. It feels like they don't know. I don't know. It feels like they don't want to. They want to pair these guys together, but it doesn't seem like they know how to keep the feud going. But they don't want to beat. They don't want to beat Riddle at all. So I don't know how they keep this feud going. What do you think?
Yeah, it seems like a really not necessarily the best setup for all of it. The way that they're going. I think comparatively to the three-match kind of arc that Riddle and Hero had in Evolve, where Hero basically won the first two and in resounding fashion, and the way that he was set up and the drama that came with it and the amount of time that they took to get to all the matches, it worked really well. And then here it feels like they're trying to like kind of capture that lightning in a bottle, but doing it completely different and just like you said, really trying to protect Riddle. And it just doesn't make sense. I just don't know where you keep going from this. The match was good, you're right, but I just don't get the booking. It feels like you're trying to force something. And it feels like you have to know about these guys having some kind of background with each other to even care about this at all. And now at this point, they're even kind of ruining it for someone who does, myself, who does know their background, because it feels like this doesn't fit the same canon in the same universe at all as those matches in the history that they've had with each other outside of NXT. So it feels like they're really not serving either master, or really not serving either crowd properly for what you're trying to get out of this.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they're trying to make Riddle with Ohno, but they don't know how to keep the feud interesting. I mean, you can't have just. I mean, I know they don't want to beat Riddle, so but they got to do something like to cause some type of roadblock, or it's just a one-sided feud. And then, do you want to read the break?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that works for me. Let me pull it up. So just go ahead, and everyone listening, you need to check out ProWrestlingOnly.com to explore other podcasts along with match reviews, features, and retrospectives. Reviews of wrestling books, video games, matches, playlists, wrestling appearances in non-wrestling TV shows and movies, and more. You can also join the conversation by signing up for the PWO forums. Been online for over a decade with over 2,000 registered members, an archive of over 4 million threads. Our message board is a vibrant community all its own. Whether you want to talk about specific matches in our match discussion archive, take a deep dive in the Microscope forum. I heard Johnny Sorrow mention that that's talking about microscopes, and that is not true. or discuss more general topics from wrestling's past and present. Check out all this and more at ProWrestlingOnly.com.
And now we're on to action, and it's action for the championship, December 7th, 2018. And man, I got to give Action credit. Because it seems like they're constantly for shows that we've loved so far, and we love the company, we love the talent involved. They've had a book a lot of stuff on the fly when injuries or stuff comes up, and this one was PCO. Well, first they had to rebook somehow to get Kane Justice out of the four because he was injured, and had to get somebody in, so they came up with an idea. I'm not sure if it worked greatly, but it did the job. Let's put it that way. And then they had to come up with and explain about PCO signing with Ring of Honor and not being there, so they had to go and try to find somebody. And then they got a good guy, but man, the PCO Buck feud was going to be hard to replace, and I don't think they quite did, but I thought they did a good job with what they're dealt. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't keep track all the time of what's going on. So I don't always know all the stuff that they had to deal with booking wise, but even without knowing that, this show was fucking phenomenal. The shows keep being phenomenal. I mean, Action is just killing it. And then you got guys in here who, I mean, I'll just say it now. AJ Gray, to me, feels like he turned it up and was impressive here, where I'm like hoping he gets back on track, because he felt to me like he had fallen off. And just so much phenomenal stuff here from Action. I mean, I thought that they did everything fantastic. I will say that I feel like I get credit for calling it with the winner. I when we were interviewing Matt, I think my first choice of the first champion was correct. So I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit. I was able to predict that phenomenal booking here. So, but yeah, I'm really loving Action, man. I tweeted it out, but I think if they keep this up, they're almost like a lock for promotion of the year. I joked about the AWE thing, but I mean, it's really tough. They almost had it sewed up last year for promotion of the year, with the amount of shows that they did. I think on the Tanny Awards, they got the show of the year, for one of their shows. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, this company has really just knocked it out of the park repeatedly. And then knowing that they do have some backstage issues here and there, and people missing stuff and having to book stuff on the fly and injuries and all that, they do a great job, man. I mean, they just really take it all with stride, and even under pressure are making the right decisions, even in situations where it's easy to make the wrong decisions.
Yep. And here we go. We get open up with Allen Angels versus O'Shea Edwards versus Bandy and Rembrandt, and here is where they're covering for Kane, who had the injury, and so whoever scores the winning pinfall gets to go into the tournament as gets a shot at the title, gets to replace Kane. So I thought they did the best they could. It made this match more important, I'll say that, so it raised the profile of this match. But you know, you always want to follow what your original plan was, but injuries is part of the game, and I felt they did the best they could in that situation with this match. I'm great. It's awesome to hear Cecil on commentary. I'm like, awesome. never would have started in Rembrandt in to open up the match, since he was a referee on the last show. I know Dylan on commentary was explaining, and I thought he tried to explain it away by mentioning how he was a referee here, but he's also wrestled before. So or he was just trying to explain that his background a little bit. But yeah, I never would have had the ref be the opener, starting opening of the match. I thought Rembrandt has a really good look, but I felt some of his moves felt pretty mechanical. I thought the heat was focused on the back. I thought the match was solid, and I thought Alan Angels is really coming into his own as a character, and he's really getting good at jawing with the crowd, and his timing's getting better, and I've always been a big fan of O'Shea. And I thought Bandy was really good trying to carry this. And Rembrandt, again, I think he has a great look. I just think he needs to loosen up a little bit. He looks a little stiff and tight in the match, but I think there's a lot of potential for him, too. But a good, solid match, 2 stars. What about you?
Yeah, I really, really like the O'Shea Edwards-Alan Angels pairing. I think that they're working super well together.
Yeah, and I felt like last time I felt like Angel should have been hiding behind O'Shea a little bit. It felt like they did that a little bit more this time around.
And, yeah, O'Shea was being the heavy ass kicker and really being in control, and Alan was kind of just taking advantage of that.
And doing some of the jawing, yeah.
Yeah, Bandy on the apron I thought was good. He's really fired up and really, seems like he's pissed off watching Rembrandt getting worked over. Rembrandt, I'm with you. Rembrandt's a little awkward. His posture and the way that he holds himself is not super natural, or not completely natural, but who knows? I mean, he could get there. I thought that both teams looked great. The good work. I mean, yeah, all around, I'm with you. And I think that this match, the way that it was set up and the way it felt heated, especially with Bandy just seeming so pissed off at the other two guys, and the way that O'Shea really just was a big time ass kicker, made it feel like they were fighting for something important in the spot getting into the main event. So I gave it 2.5. I really enjoyed it all around.
Cool. That leads us to Chad Skywalker, which I think is a cool name, versus Michelle Michael under the Watts rules, which I think is I'm sure it is. It's a play off of Bill Watts' rules when he took over WCW in 92, like, no off the top rope moves type of stuff. That was divisive at the time, and it was just he managed to use them in one way, and it didn't quite do that way. Like, but I what'd you make of this with the Watts rules and trying to explain everything?
I liked the Watts rules. I thought the commentary team did a good job putting it over. I thought that it was interesting when Marshall almost throws Skywalker out of the ring, and they talk about that would have been a DQ, the old Watts rule thing about not, no over the top rope throws too. So, I think did really good. This is where I'm talking about promotion, smart booking promotion. You got two new debut guys that deliver kind of an interesting situation. You got Marshall being really more of a big time gimmick with what he's doing and the Watts rules and all that, so you get these guys, you can showcase them on the undercard of a show where a lot of your main talent is tied up in the four-way main event, as the champion, the guys who have storyline and stuff built around are all kind of focused in that match, and so you're able to kind of fill out the card with stuff like this that works as an attraction match that I think gets over, but isn't going to overshadow anything. This one I gave 2 stars. I think everything was real solid. I think actually both guys probably have a future. I think that both guys could probably do something really. I think that they're actually both pretty good. So yeah, I just think that this was, like, again, as I said, really smart for the promotion to put a match like this on a card like this in this position.
Yep. I enjoyed it. I gave it 2 stars. I thought the comedy worked with the Watts rules. I thought it got the heat that it needed, and the crowd reacted beautifully to, like, the behind the when he got heat by using a closed fist. Yeah, I really enjoyed what they did here, and it was kind of like it was almost like, hey, look, I know Joe, this is not might be for you guys, but try this, and it's like a different type of comedy, and I appreciate that. Then we got a scramble match, and I thought this was good. I thought Flacco connected with the kids really well. I thought the log roll spot I thought ruled. I need more Cousin Shaggy in my life for sure. A little sloppy at times, and I really liked Austin Pereira here in this match. And it was a good solid scramble. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think Aja's coming together. She's got a presence of her own. She really is starting to, I think, look pretty slick and polished. So she looked good in here. Flacco, obviously, he's got something charisma-wise. He dropped the double hat, so that's a positive for me. You know, and Cousin Shaggy's always entertaining. Everybody else kind of fell a little bit ulcer-land. Not really a lot there. 2.25, good little scramble match, exciting, cool dives, all that kind of action. And again, just filling out the undercard on a show like this, again, where, like I said, your importance is all really focused heavily at the top of the card.
Agreed. Then when that leads us to Eric Royal and Freddie Yehi, and they're in pretty much a blood feud at this point. What you make of this match?
I fucking loved this. These guys just beating the hell out of each other. I mean, this was just a all-out fight. You don't really, you think you're going to get some kind of technical grappling when it's Fred in there, but no, I mean, the closest thing he's doing to any kind of wrestling is just throwing big suplexes, kicking the shit out of Royal repeatedly. Really just, I mean, yeah, these guys just were going to town on each other. Loved Fred even doing the Koji clutch on the bottom rope. Sets up a suicide dive into the stage that gets the match waved off. Kind of thought that was neat, the way that this thing just starts going crazy. I thought it was good that they tease stuff with the stage and going into the stage earlier in the match, and then at the end of the match, after it's over, Royal takes Yehi up there, powerbombs him through the table. Feels like a big fucking deal. Huge heat, huge, you know, just really just... I mean, because so there's nothing like this on action, so it really stands out, you know, in this company to have someone doing something like that. Big time stuff. Eric Royal, again, I mean, just one of the best going. Freddie Yehi, phenomenal. Just really great stuff here. I give it 3.5 stars. I thought both guys looked fantastic. Everything in this was really snug and tight. But again, it's setting up more. The big angle at the end was awesome. Play off the injury stuff with Fred. But I mean, you know, I'm hoping to get the big, big blow off match coming forward. Hopefully then we can get some kind of no DQ match, or, you know what I mean, some kind of stipulation added to that. And then it'll really feel like something, because they've been building it up. Not like the no DQ match between Dennis and Mastiff, you know, and this will feel like it's really earned once we get to it.
Yep, exactly. I loved it too. I give it 3.5 stars. And I'm with you. I liked it. It had a big fight to start. Exactly how it needed to be. These guys didn't need to be mat wrestling, exchanging holds. They needed to be fighting. That's what we got here. This has become a personal feud. Royal is great at bumping and eating all of Yehi's offense. They're fighting on the floor. I like Dylan covering up for the lack of of 10 counts on why the ref's not counting. So I always give commentators credit for something that would bother me, but because they cover for it, I'm like, all right, I'll pretend they didn't screw that up. I thought that was good. Loved Yehi's bump from the spear. Yehi suplexes the life out of Royal. That was ridiculous. Royal's pounce and the bump by Yehi was incredible. Just incredible stuff. And now Royal is beating on Yehi using the size. Yehi's dive onto the stage was sick. The finish takes the feud up a notch, and now I need an Atlanta street fight between the two, or is Falls Count Anywhere? I think that's how they booked this finish. And it was fantastic going through the table. Really put some more heat on the on Royal and Yehi on the feud. I thought this was great. Then we get Ted Ireland versus AJ Gray. What did you think of this one?
I actually really liked this. I teased at it earlier. I thought that AJ looked really good here. He's just looking, you know, big and badass, real kind of more simple stuff throughout, not necessarily going over the top, but doing some athletic flying and moving around. I thought Ireland had a cool look. I thought he used his boxing stuff good. I liked the kind of Superman-esque punch action that he did throughout to kind of play off of that gimmick, but I thought that AJ Gray looked great here, kicking ass, really kind of, yeah, like I said, like kicking ass, taking names kind of vibe. I really think he's putting it together there. I thought AJ looked fantastic here, realistically. Ireland is, I wouldn't say bad, but, you know, it seems a little green maybe, but I like the gimmick. I like that he worked to the gimmick, and I think that he could get there. I gave the match 2.5 stars, but I was really impressed by how AJ Gray looked here, because I haven't been super high on him, and I feel like if he continues like this, he might put it together to where I could start to really get into him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I liked Ireland's pre-match outfit. I thought Gray had a good start here. I like Ireland's work in the corner. I thought the match was really fun. I gave it 2.25. Good, solid stuff from these guys. And then we got Cam Carter versus Billy Buck. I give this 3.25. Billy Buck is talking shit, and he's not only talking shit, he's talking shit to my buddy, the host with the most, Ben Zaney, in the front row right off the bat. Early shine by Carter. Turnbuckle spot sets up the heat. Love how Buck keeps on stomping, doing the simple stuff, peppering some punches here and there. Just really a maestro. Love Buck's brain buster, though that was nasty. Buck focusing on the neck and back area. Great near fall on Cam's powerbomb. Really good stuff. 3.25. What'd you make of the match?
Yeah, I think you talked about it, but Buck, I mean, the maestro thing, the kind of peppering in, picking his spots, working the back, telling a story, but also leaving a lot of room for Cam to stand out. You talked about the near fall on the powerbomb that I thought was great, but I thought was followed up very nicely with the near fall on the buckshot super kick. So I thought that was done super well, too. And then the finish itself, you got Cam using the storm cradle driver, the one wing angel or whatever, which is Slim J's anger management move. So you do kind of get that Slim J, you talked about it. Slim J kind of filled in for what probably would have been the Cam Carter role in the four way. And then now you got Cam Carter coming in, filling in for PCO, but doing a call out to Slim J in the way that he wins the match. So it's interesting to think where the storyline's going. I gave the match 3 stars. Really cool stuff. I think, you know, Billy Buck is just super impressive how good he is. And you know, around the time that everyone was talking him up after the SCI, I thought that it maybe was a little bit of a kind of a gimmick, you know, being like it's ironic into this guy, but as you watch him more and more, it's like, oh no, he's actually really, really fucking good. And just over the time, I've like really regret kind of pushing back on that, thinking that people were just like being funny into him because he's so fucking good. Like, he's really great, and I think Cam Carter's got a lot of upside. So, fun match.
And then we get to what everyone's here for: four-way AC Mac versus Ike Cross versus Slim J versus Allen Angels for the title. What'd you make of it?
I thought that they did a really good, interesting stuff. You talked about it with the four-way in NXT last week with the women, but they thought that they did a good job here doing something similar with the dynamics between heels and baby faces, with Allen Angels and AC Mac working together at times. Slim J is just fucking nutty with that huge twisting dive to the floor. I thought that they did a good job keeping the pace, keeping the action, Obviously, probably didn't expect pace to be an issue with any of these four guys. Even the biggest guy, Ike Cross, being known as a pretty big-time cardio guy and a big-time, like, go-go-go guy. Not go-go-go, but you know what I mean, a guy who can go. Love the teasing between Cross and Mac as they're going to kind of lock up with the storyline and the way that everything went, and then getting that cut off by Angels and Slim J. I thought that some of the choreography of stuff was almost in other settings I could think of as too cute, but I thought that they did it in natural ways here, to where the stuff just kind of almost felt more organic, even if it wasn't like insane over the top, like clearly choreographed, but you know, it was in a way that was just enough to really, I think, accentuate moments, which I was really impressed with. Alan Angels, yeah, again, you talked about it in the first match, but here again, having a second match, really coming into his own. A really solid heel, man. And it's, I mean, thinking about it, I'm like, I don't think a lot of the WWA 4 guys are, I mean, I guess there are a mix. I mean, some of them are good heels, some baby faces, but he's, to me, I almost would say he's the best heel that's come out of there so far, almost. So really impressed with that. And then we get, like I said, I called it. I'm going to take my credit to get the AC Mack winning the championship. The guy who, my kind of reasoning behind it, the guy who feels the most authentically as like an action star, primarily a big time star in action. This is his promotion. This is his place. I love he even talks about it. He's, you know, the colors are his colors. You know, the yellow and black is the action colors, and it's the AC Mack color. So it almost felt clandestine that he was going to be the first champ and win the title here. And I just thought that they did a great job. I mean, everything throughout this was done super well. I give the whole match overall 3.75. Just really, really great way to get your first champion in a big time four way that I think they did a really good job of making it, really using the four way match to the boast of its ability, getting the most out of it instead of, you know, just kind of doing spot and everything. AC Mack catching the spear into the pedigree was such a cool little spot. And then, you know, that leading into him setting up a second like pedigree for the finish, I thought was great. And just a really cool way to put the championship on the first champion here. So, yeah. So what did you think of this, Pete?
What was your star rating?
3.75.
That's what I went to. I really enjoyed it. It was all action. But it had a backbone and story to it. I like that they have Cross and Mac right after each other. Corkscrew Plancha by Slim J was awesome. All the refs. I know I had a point here. I can't remember. But I love all the pinfall and stuff. All the pinfall attempts early on. All action early on. Everybody wants to win. They're not, you know, it feels like they're trying to win a match as opposed to look at us, have a great match, which is very important to me. Slim J eliminated first, was very full of shenanigans and shocking. Not full of shenanigans, but it was very shocking after getting the big let's make a new baby face treatment last show. And him to go out like that kind of surprised me. But it did. Now the numbers are in the heels' favors. Cross hits a nice DDT on Mac. And I love the touch of Mac stealing the pin. Mac was also, was really awesome. It was the glue here. And I love the post-match of Mac celebrating and Cam Carter comes out and challenged him to a title match. Really, really, really good stuff. Man, yeah, and another easy thumbs-up show. I mean, what can I say? These guys just, they book, they're, well, first of all, they're matchmakers, so they make matches you want to see. You book them, and you come out wanting something more, maybe. Or you book it to where you're getting maximum effort and results out of your talent roster. This is the little promotion that could, and they are kicking ass. What about your final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the final kind of angle situation here, it almost feels just like so perfect. I mean, Cam Carter comes out, challenges for the next, and it makes sense. Even though it's bad, you know, it sucked that they had to deal with the injury. Now it's like they're really lucky because they have the perfect first challenger to where it doesn't, you know, it makes perfect sense. You don't have to deal with setting it up and building it. You can just do it off the angle. You didn't have to have an obvious match earlier in the card where you have a number one contender match, so you know, like, whoever wins, then that's going to give you at least kind of an idea that you're going to have a heel or a babyface win the title. So I thought that they were really lucky in that regard. So it just kind of shows. I mean, action wrestling, like I talk about, I loved the booking. I thought the matches were great. I'm excited for more. The storylines are interesting. Everything's cool. A lot of people are, like, really interesting to see what they're going to do next. They've got their own unique stars, they've got their own unique people, their champion, like I said, feels authentically of the company, which is a great plus. Just everything is really hitting. They're just very lucky. Like you said, they deal with so much, but one of the things, like the Cam Carter thing, like I just mentioned, like it almost feels like it ended up being a positive for them. In some ways, it was like a blessing in disguise, you know, for the booking wise. And I know that they probably wouldn't agree because it was probably really difficult to deal with and a headache, but to me the booking makes perfect sense, and it's just like kind of great that they ended up with that being the situation.
All right, man, final thoughts. I mean, not final thoughts, anything you want to say before we head out?
No, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead, and that's about it for me.
Follow me at Titans of Wrestling. Have a great week. Later on.